Hello, welcome to the Twin Perspectives podcast series, run by travel bloggers Twins That Travel. That's us,
Claire
and Laura.
Tune in for regular discussions about our latest travels, interviews and life more generally.
Happy listening.
Bye.
Welcome back to the Twin Perspectives podcast series.
Episode 8, season 3.
After another hiatus.
4 week hiatus.
3 or 4 weeks, I'd say.
Yeah.
Probably 4.
I think it's been 4. And we have no excuses again. We really don't, Laura. We don't have an excuse.
I guess it's because we've wanted to use the studio where we are in Northampton, and it's a radio studio, so it's not always available.
Yeah.
And he's got like quite tight bookings. So anyway, long and short
is that we're back again.
We're back again now, and we're going to be recording 2, so we can get at least 2 out in fairly consecutive order.
Yes, so this is episode 8, and today we're going to be talking about the Pinterest UK workshop that we visited last Wednesday,
yeah.
So we were really fortunate to be, I mean, we'll do a little intro before we move on to the normal spiel. We were really fortunate, and I have no idea why, but we were nominated in the Pinterest UK Awards this year for Best Travel Pin.
We were indeed, for an Abu Dhabi one. I think it was an itinerary for 3 days in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and for those who got nominated, we were all invited along to a lovely day at Ennismore Sessions House.
Previously just Sessions House,
which
I think,
is the most beautiful house I've ever been in London.
Yeah, in Clerkenwell.
Yeah, so a full day of workshops with Pinterest.
Yeah.
And it was such a, I think we've been to sort of social media platform events before, but I've never been to an event that felt so friendly and so helpful before, I don't think.
Yeah, generally helpful, rather than the whole, we're creative, we're so popular, you just want to be here because...
I think you're talking about Instagram, aren't you?
Yes.
So you went to this event last week with Pinterest, and yeah, it just sort of blew my mind. We've been using Pinterest anyway, really sort of solidly for 2 years, I guess.
Well, I wouldn't use the term solidly. I think 2 years ago we were awakened to the fact that a massive flaw in our blogging business model, or blogging traffic model, I guess, was that we weren't using Pinterest. So about 2 years ago, I then took a course that our friend Rebecca actually runs on Pinterest and set it all up and set out, went and I pinned like a madman for, I'd say, 3 months.
Yeah.
And then I forgot about it again.
But we didn't really forget about it in that we started to implement, which we'll talk about, some things that we do in every blog
the
post.
Claire, the bare basics, okay. Like literally the minimum.
Yeah. But anyway, this somehow, we've been using it for 2 years, and I guess we used it well enough that we got nominated for a Pinterest UK award.
Yeah.
So this week, yeah, this episode, really, we just want to talk about everything that we learn about on our day with Pinterest.
Yeah.
And hopefully inspire you as a blogger or a small business owner to embrace Pinterest in 2020, because there are so many good functions within the platform. And unlike Instagram, which is just seems to be going more and more downhill every day, Pinterest, I think, is a really still such a positive platform where you can really grow your audience, whether that's as a business owner or a blogger.
And that's not necessarily growing your audience on Pinterest, so you want to get maybe more followers.
Yeah.
It's actually growing an audience for your blog or your small business that comes via Pinterest.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with growing a massive audience on Pinterest, which is very refreshing.
Yeah, very refreshing. So yeah, in a short moment, we will come on to everything that we learnt. We have put it into a blog post, which is up now, but we thought it might be easier also to do a podcast that's a bit more... You can share a bit more detail, maybe.
It's a bit easier, isn't it?
A bit more informal about it all.
But before we begin, let's start with our usual. Laura, what have you been loving this week?
Aliens and UFOs.
I got you into it.
Yeah, so Claire said to me, though weirdly, what you told me to watch, I was a bit... So Claire
still
told
very
me to watch on Netflix a documentary film, docu-film.
What was it called?
Called...
Something unanswered? No, undocumented.
No.
Categorized.
Oh, this is so annoying.
Un-something. We should put it in the notes.
Unacknowledged.
Unacknowledged. I think that's it.
Yeah, really?
I think...
Okay. Which is basically about how... See, and the point is, though, that there's a conspiracy theory that you've been made to sound crazy when you say the word UFOs or you talk
just
about it.
Just say it.
But anyway, it's fairly common knowledge that we are often visited by extraterrestrial vehicles.
Correct.
and why... this isn't shared publicly. So no, I watched that. And
very
then,
interesting documentary.
And then I went straight on to Joe Rogan's podcast, which I always see trends like as number one.
Isn't he like the biggest podcast in the world?
Yeah, he's amazing. I really like his podcast. And there was some podcasts there, with one with Bob Lazar, who kind of came out in the 80s with his story that he worked in Area 51, basically as a physicist on these spacecraft, back engineering them, trying to reinvent what they had, and he couldn't do it. And he came out with this story, and his life was pretty much ruined, and he was savaged by the FBI and the like. Anyway, I listened to that with much interest.
Yeah.
And I listened to another one with David...
And that's the one I listened to.
Further?
I can't remember his name. But he was a
pilot.
I mean, the Marines? The Navy.
The Navy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he documents what he calls the Tic Tac UFO.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch the video of it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of annoying because, like, they obviously, because they're used to watching stuff on radar.
It seems crazy.
It seems
different.
Crazy, whereas I'm like, meh.
It looks just like a helicopter.
Just a blob.
Yeah. I showed James, he was like, that's just nothing.
Yeah. Anyway, so I have now gone down that black hole, and I'm fairly certain that we're regularly visited and that we are actually just a planet of workers who are working and slogging our guts out to create technology that is for of use on another planet.
That does not sound crazy at all.
No, but that's the thing, Claire.
I know.
Because they make us all sound crazy so that we don't know the truth. So I don't know how I found that, whether it's empowering and I was like, well, you know, you can sack off Instagram. Who cares about follower counts if all my life is creating technology for another alien species? So maybe in a way it was actually an empowering revelation for me.
I'm so glad you've been loving that this week.
I just have a lot.
I'm pleased for you.
And what about you, Claire?
I set up a new Instagram account for B, so I didn't...
Oh, yeah.
I didn't fill...
I saw you trying to get followers over there.
Yeah. So I didn't want to fill Twins at Travel with videos of B, so I thought I would create her own account because she's on a weight loss journey. She's 6 kilograms.
She should be on a weight loss journey?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, she's on a weight loss journey, okay.
Oh.
And I have been very much enjoying creating content for B. It's very easy compared to Twins at Travel. I just pick up my phone and take a photo of a cat.
Yeah.
I have 124 followers. No, correction. B has 124 followers. And I'm just enjoying playing on Instagram for my own use because I don't have a personal account like you.
Yeah.
So I'm very much just enjoying doing my own little thing on there.
If it takes off, you're just going to put all your time into that then?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I do actually have a personal Instagram account too.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but I never did.
Oh, okay.
So I'm really enjoying using it for that purposes.
My personal Laura Friends is where I get to go and look at people's Instagram accounts that I don't want to come up in. Because when I log into Transit Travel, I can see all the weirdos you've been searching for.
Don't care.
So in Laura and Friends, I can just do it in the privacy of my own account.
Exes, girlfriends and things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been doing that, and this week with one of the freelance clients that I've got, I've been learning all about Google Ads, which is very nerdy, but I've been wanting to learn about them for so long, and I feel very satisfied at the end of this week that I have learned something new that I can potentially apply to Twins at Travel.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Though Claire is this person, in the past when I say about, so-and-so about Google Ads, you go, yeah, I know.
I know, I would know how to set up a Google ad, but I wouldn't know how to do, like I was saying, if they've done one thing, how do you retarget them to do another thing? And that's what I learned this week.
I learned that on my Udacity course.
Yeah.
I just took online.
That's about it, really.
Yeah, so aliens and your cat's Instagram. Yeah. Wow, another thrilling week. Another, FOMO.
The next thing we usually move on to is Twins at Tackle. Obviously, though, we haven't recorded a few podcasts, so there's been about 4 Twins at Tackles.
There has,
We didn't do one on Tuesday because I knew I wasn't free on Tuesday. Left into your own hands, Laura.
No, Twins at Tackle is your thing, Claire. It's your baby.
Nuh-uh.
Nothing to do with me, unfortunately.
What?
I don't run it. I do the photography and the captions for Instagram and you do Twins at Tackle.
I just wasn't free on Tuesday. And you know, also when you think, once I do put it up, that means like you'll have to be glued to your phone, basically.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do that this Tuesday. So we had a break this Tuesday. But we have covered a lot in the last 4 weeks. My favourite was definitely the Halloween special.
The ghost stories, which...
James is away at the moment. And like you said, last night I thought of that one... Oh, God, why am I reminding myself again? Who was that ghost... That the woman, and she had to like basically get him out of her house eventually.
Oh. And there was like a spirit. John. Oh. Yeah, John the ghost.
Yeah.
Your friend and mine.
Yeah, so I loved that one. And I wasn't expecting the stories to be so scary.
Yeah, some were actually, to use a pun, haunting.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They were terrifying.
I took them in my stride, and it wasn't until Mike went away that I started thinking. But then I actually started thinking more about The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
And the man that
and
floats.
And the tall man that
and
floats.
And then the girl when she's hanging. Did you watch all of it?
Yeah, I did.
When she's hanging over them.
She's hanging over
You know
them.
When she opens her eyes and it's actually
oh,
her haunting herself?
I've got to sleep.
There's going to be season two, but a new house, new cast.
I love anything haunted. So we did a brilliant tense tackle on that. Last week was co-workers from hell.
Yeah, I really wanted to share some of my own experiences, but then I got scared that my ex-co-workers would be watching the stories.
Exactly,
and I thought, in a passive-aggressive way, what better platform to finally air my grievances 2 years on?
60,000 people.
Yeah, than to say it, but I didn't. But a lot of them concerned fridges, people putting or leaving their food in fridges,
leaving their food around the office.
Yeah.
Then there were some just awful, horrible ones. You know, people who've just had such a stressful time in a workplace.
We're just bastards.
Very lechy men in a workplace seemed to be a common theme.
Yeah.
So that was an enlightening one. It made me feel good about the fact that I don't have to be in an office full time.
Yeah.
Because I've forgotten about the bugbears of working with co-workers.
Well, I've always talked about, weirdly, the co-worker that then appeared at the airport when we were going to Istanbul.
That was very odd, yeah.
He was this guy that I worked with, and he was so tight that he would wait till, like, you know when you have a meeting and you get sandwiches?
Oh, yeah.
He'd wait till we had all left, and he'd pick the ham out for his cat, and he'd stay after work so he could use the internet because he refused to get it at home.
And then we all met him in Gatwick Airport.
Yeah, but what's really annoying is, so back in the day when I worked with him, he'd messaged me once saying, I know that you're going away, do you want to go swimsuit shopping together?
What?
And
what?
He's married.
Oh, dear. You should have told that story.
He's just bizarre and a very odd person.
Anyway, I feel like this is going to turn into
an
event.
And he always smelt like wee.
There we go.
Like wee.
Okay. Well, you had your chance to air this.
Yeah, but I get scared, don't I?
Yeah. Well, you're putting it on a podcast instead. What's worse? But if you haven't caught up with the last four Twins at Tackles, they're all saved in our highlights.
Are they?
They all are. They all are. Yeah.
Co-workers isn't.
I did forget about co-workers.
Yeah, co-workers isn't.
So there we go. There's the Twins at Tackle for the week.
Upcoming travels.
Finally, upcoming travels. I'm off to Prague.
You are? Well, I guess this will reflect a little bit what we want to talk about in another podcast, is the fact that we are limiting our travel. Well, being more choosy.
Not limiting, because it's not like I don't want to travel. It's being more choosy.
Being more choosy.
Selective.
Selective, yeah. And
not making travel a chore.
Yeah, and you know, you wake up sometimes and think you get that sicky feeling in your tummy, like, oh, I've got to go away again, I've got to get out of the flight,
yeah,
and I'm so tired, or I've not seen Mike or
have
my friends
exercised in forever,
yeah, and then you just feel a bit when you get there and you're already stressed about deliverables. It's not
Let's save that for the next podcast. So upcoming travels, I have purposely booked my own trip with James on just after Christmas to Prague, where apparently it's going to be freezing cold but magical.
Excellent.
So that's my trip.
Yeah, I'm going to go hopefully to Cornwall over Christmas.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, Cornwall, and then we come back.
And then we're going to the Finnish Arctic.
Then we're taking our mum to the Lake District.
Again, what you're doing, Nora, is you're reviewing every travel you can remember.
Oh, yeah.
We're meant to be just focusing on upcoming, because otherwise you repeat the same travel every podcast.
Okay, yeah.
So let's keep those.
Well,
back.
I really wanted us to take a mini break to Scotland before Christmas to go to that bridge.
I just don't know when we're going to fit it in.
Well, I definitely could fit it in.
Yeah. But mainly Prague.
Yeah, okay.
That's my upcoming travels.
In the main, Prague.
And I'm very busy. I've just ordered my Lonely Planet ready.
Yeah.
Because nothing gives me more satisfaction than having a Lonely Planet ready.
I had to take four out to America.
Oh, I would love that, though.
No, weighed an awful lot, Claire.
Oh, that's true. You should have downloaded them on PDF. I did that for Bologna.
It's not the same. It's not the same.
No, it isn't the same. Anyway, oh, here we go.
My library books are due back today. I just
got
online
and
read them.
At least a 30p fine. So, let's begin with our Pinterest workshop and everything that we learned.
Yes.
Just bringing over my notes.
So I think in the main, what I really liked about this is it wasn't awards, but the awards was like 5 minutes.
Well, we weren't there.
Oh, we missed the award bit. But then actually it was really, they flew in their team from San Francisco, and there was the London team there, and they wanted to put on a really informative day, genuinely informative day, about Pinterest for business, Pinterest for blogging, and just what to look out for the trends next year, what to be an early adopter of. Mm-hmm. and all these things. So we went along with notepads galore.
Yeah.
And thankfully...
we got our own Pinterest notepads.
Yeah, we did.
Here today.
Yeah, I brought them specially along. Even though I've got nothing to write in one, I just wanted it here as a prop. And there were lots of... What was really nice is there were lots of people there, but there were a lot of brands. So there's like people like Made.com,
Lonely Planet, Marie Claire.
And they were all there to learn as well. So it was basically like a school day, which was my favourite kind of day.
I loved it. I really loved it. I think I also, because I obviously do marketing as freelance, I just felt like a complete nerd. I just really enjoyed the day. But I thought what we could talk about firstly is sort of before we move on to the tips of using Pinterest in 2020 is for those who don't use Pinterest already, how is it such a different platform to the others? Because it gets grouped as a social media platform, but it's not a social media platform.
No, and they were quite intent on stressing that they don't see themselves as social media. They see themselves as like an inspirational resource.
Yeah.
In fact, they coined themselves the last positive corner of the internet.
Loved that.
Throwing some shade at perhaps other platforms, which I quite enjoyed that in a way. And actually, the points they made about why people use it, Pinterest, and why bloggers or businesses should be using it were... a revelation to me, and I felt kind of stupid for not realizing the mentality behind a pinner and why it's actually so excellent, more so than Instagram or Twitter or Facebook for pushing traffic or driving sales.
So Pinterest categorically is not a social media platform because you don't go on there to catch up with your friends.
No,
go on there, they say, with a positive mindset in that usually you're logging onto Pinterest to find inspiration or an answer to something. So it might be, I really want to make a Christmas cake.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how to make one.
Or I've got engaged. What will my wedding look like?
Yeah, or I need inspiration for my honeymoon. Yeah. So no one is logging onto the platform looking to catch up with someone. They are open-minded and they are looking for answers to things, which is why having a blog, your blog articles on there, or being a brand and having products on there is so important.
Yeah, and I had, and this is that, she said that, and she said it so flippantly, and I was like,
whoa.
Oh, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
That I'd never thought that. When I go into Pinterest, I'm not like, okay, what's mum doing? I'm like, well, I've got a question. I want it answered. Yeah. Oh, there's a great product. Let me link through. Let me buy it.
Yeah, or I want to make a board for inspiration, and I'll go back to it later, and I might buy something, or I might read someone's blog post on honeymoon ideas.
But then I don't feel like, as some people might with Instagram then, when I see a product linked, or I see...
An ad,
or I see a blog post like, this is the most amazing thing you'll ever do in your life, click here. I don't feel begrudged by it. I don't feel, like, irritated by it.
No.
Because it's a service to me. It's inspirational and useful content.
Yeah.
And... within the context that I'm on Pinterest for, it makes sense.
Exactly.
And it's a good...
Well, if you imagine it's like running an Instagram ad, when you come across an ad in Instagram by a brand, it's an interruption from what you're doing, which is usually trying to look at pictures of your friends or people that you follow.
Yeah.
So it's an interruption. An ad on Pinterest isn't an interruption.
No.
It's a really helpful piece of content.
It's a resource, yeah.
So that is why it's so different to the other platforms and why... perhaps of all the changes to Instagram, removing of likes and just a negative space, why Pinterest can be such a positive space.
Instagram will claim that removing of likes makes it a positive space.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
But when we started that, we went to the first workshop, The Science of a Pin, and Whitney, who was from the San Francisco
office. She was Global Creative Lead.
Yeah. I just thought, I've never thought of it like that before.
No. And they basically say people go there to make their dreams a reality and to look for actionable content.
Yeah.
So, And I guess content that's attainable as well for them. Whereas, again, with Instagram, not necessarily attainable.
No, it's aspirational.
It's aspirational. So, again, it's these nuances and slight differences that actually make a huge difference if you are a blogger or you're a small business or a big business.
Yeah. So hopefully that will make, you know, if someone isn't on Pinterest already, make them realise why it should be such a good space to explore.
And the second point is, I think it's the largest search engine.
It's the second largest search engine after Google.
With 800 million?
Yep. It's 250 million active users every month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the searches are incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, funny enough...
it is just a search engine, really, isn't it?
Really it really is, yeah.
Yeah.
It really, you know, hair ideas.
Yeah.
Nail ideas.
Yeah. That's why you should be on the Pinterest platform to begin with. And obviously, like we mentioned, we are already on it, but we probably weren't really utilising it much until... 2 years ago. And over the last 2 years, even though we probably haven't, we've definitely utilised it, but like you were saying, we might have not utilised it even, you know,
We weren't pinning regularly.
Yeah, to the capacity that we could be. But even over those 2 years, we have seen such an increase in website traffic and referrals thanks to Pinterest.
Yeah.
Because the content on there is evergreen.
Well, they say the average pin would last, what, 101 days.
But some of ours have lasted way longer.
Yeah, but on average, I mean, even if that is the average, so let's think you post an Instagram post, it continues engagement for 2 or 3 days.
Oh, if that, 12 hours.
So just think, you can create a piece of content, one pin.
Yeah.
And it's going to be used, utilised, recycled, shared, disseminated for 101 days.
Yeah.
That's a good ROI in my mind in terms of the fact it takes no time at all to create a pin.
Yeah. And it's an evergreen content site, which is for us as bloggers, we've really seen already after 2 years, we've kind of reaped the rewards in terms of website traffic.
And I would say it's not like, you know, we started pinning and the traffic boomed within a week.
No.
It's a slow burner, but it's a consistently increasing slow burner.
Yeah.
So I guess the flame gets brighter and
oh, definitely.
More hot.
I had a look at our traffic and I wrote this in the blog. It kind of makes up about 30% of our traffic at the moment, which also against organic traffic is huge.
Yeah,
it really is huge. So for those who are a bit nervous about getting started with Pinterest, it's not a place where you're going to see overnight,
no,
you know, boom, your website's going to be inundated. But it takes time for things to heat up.
Yeah.
But once they do, it's perfect.
Yeah.
For a blogger and a business owner as well.
Exactly. And something I did like last December, I remember I went through a massive spate of it last December.
Yeah.
Now I'm suddenly seeing that now they're well established within the Pinterest ecosystem.
Yeah.
And the traffic's there. So in terms of like kind of easy wins, it's not an instant win, but it's very little work for something that will definitely come into fruition a bit later down the line.
Okay. Let's kind of talk through someone who is either not using Pinterest or hasn't set it up as a business account yet.
Yeah, because that's the one thing I didn't appreciate, is that I thought we could just have a personal account. But actually, in the main, you should, if you're a blogger, if you're a small business, big business, have a business account.
So the first thing with a business account is that it gives you, you can basically claim your website and your social media site. So when you log into a business account, it will ask you your URL, so you put in your blog name, and it will ask you your Instagram feed or your social media feed. So you're already feeding in kind of, your main platforms, which you won't have the opportunity to do on a personal account.
And why is that important?
Because then it will be able to monitor, in terms of analytics, who's going over to your account.
Okay, great.
So, so the first thing to do is make sure you have a business account.
Can anyone get a business account?
Yeah, anyone can. Well, I doubt it if you don't have a website.
Okay.
No, I don't think you could.
Okay.
Yeah. So only if you have a blog or a business, you'd need a business account. So claim your website and then start creating pins, which, again, people are like, well, that's easy to say. But what do you mean by start creating a pin?
Because as we learnt in the workshop, there is a science behind a pin.
Yeah. So a pin is basically what you see on a website, you know, that on Pinterest, these small little boxes which open up. And are usually for a business account called a rich pin. And so a rich pin, do you want to explain what they are? Do you want me to?
No, because I don't know.
Okay. So a rich pin, so a normal pin, if it wasn't a rich pin, you'd click on it and it would just be a photo or something. And maybe in the caption you've put your website. But people would have to manually, you know, click on that. A rich pin is a pre-populated pin, which can either be an article pin. So that could be, which is probably most important for a blogger, you click on it and then underneath is a small segment of that blog post. And then it's very easy. You can then click read more and it will take you straight to your website to read more.
Yeah.
So it's a much more user-friendly.
Yeah.
The other one is a product pin. Mm-hmm. And that would obviously be, if you're a business, you can create a product and then you can click shop now. That will take you straight to the product. The last one is a recipe pin. So for people who are creating recipes, you can do try now and then you can obviously try the recipe. And I think that on that one as well, you can do things like I've tried it and this is what it was like. So they're very interactive. So they're completely different to a non-business sense pin.
Yeah.
And that you'd have to sort of manually create something and hope that they clicked into your website, you know, through there. A rich pin is sort of populated from your website.
And how do you populate it from the website?
So it's just a bit of code that you'd put into your website and that would therefore be able to make you create a rich pin. And you would choose it to be an article pin, a product pin, or a recipe
pin. Just one
pin.
Piece of code?
Yeah, from what I remember.
Okay.
I mean, I might put a link in the blog description.
Okay.
But yeah, it's. I mean, if I could do it, anyone can do it. But that is what, if you're running a blog, that is what you need. You need a rich pin, which is an article pin. And basically, it's just, it will pull through a little bit of your blog post so people can start to
like
read about it.
Uh-huh.
And then they can click read more and it will take them straight to your website. So rich pins are imperative to a business account and for people who are trying to improve traffic or sell a product.
Does Pinterest have a basic step-by-step rich thing guide.
What I think is amazing about Pinterest is they have so many boards with guides to all of these things.
They've launched Pinterest Academy, which I think was really good. Pinterest Academy, basically, you go on there and it's got step-by-step how-tos for all of the latest innovations, but also the previous kind of fundamentals that Claire's talking about.
Yeah, so... Yeah, if you get stuck, have a look. Pinterest UK have their own help boards, which are incredibly, and it's step by step. They're going to talk you through it. So have a rich pin. And then really you just, the last thing you want to do is make sure you have pin it buttons on your website.
Yeah.
So this is, again, I think we have a plugin, don't we?
We just had a plugin and even I could do this.
Yeah.
It was literally just install it.
And all that it means is if you hover over your images in a blog post, a little pin it button comes up and you click it and it will automatically create a little box from your Pinterest where you can say which board you want it to go to. Yeah. So it's just encouraging your users to be pinning your content, basically, in a really easy way.
And I also added something called Tasty Pins, which is a WordPress plugin. And there is a small amount to pay each year. I think it's around £30-ish. So Tasty Pins, basically, so if I say there was an image on our website that I wanted to pin, when I went to pin it, the little box would come up and I'd write a description, for example. This means that when I'm adding images to my blog post as I go along, the Tasty Pin allows there to already be a box for pin description there. Yeah. So as I go along, I can add my alt text, I can add all that kind of stuff, title or caption, but I can also put in there my Pinterest thing. So when people are pinning, I've already got my Pinterest description there with all of the keywords in there that I want. Yeah. So five cozy UK winter breaks. And so it just means it's also really easy. So when your users are pinning, the description's there and it's got your
keywords.
Yeah,
because there's nothing more annoying that you click on a pin, because these aren't rich pins, these are from people pinning your content.
Yeah.
Then clicking on a photo and underneath there's nothing.
Or there's like JPEG 00123.
So this basically, if I was looking at someone else's board and I clicked on it, there would be a description and it would hopefully therefore make it, firstly, to be found
because of the keywords,
and perhaps relate it back to your website.
And I think as well it's user friendly. It means your users aren't having to write in their own descriptions perhaps, and they're also writing a description that you want this pin to be found for.
Yeah. So Tasty Pins is another very useful plugin to have.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason, because it was called Tasty Pins, I thought it was for recipes or something for some reason.
No, I'm not sure why it's called Tasty Pins, but I always do it now. And also, I guess, now because it sits within the image within your blog post, does it help SEO? I don't know, but in a way, I always make sure the keyword's in there as well.
So we've discussed, obviously, setting up your business profile, getting
rich pins,
plugins, a pin it plugin,
and then create your boards.
But you need to start then creating your boards. So they are basically categories, I guess, that you would call them. And depending on what kind of blogger you are, for us, for travel, we have lots of different boards.
And back in the day, you would have to say you had travel, you'd create maybe like 10 boards, Europe, USA. Now you can create one parent board, travel, and beneath that you can create a number
subcategories.
Subcategories, so Europe. So someone can go into one main board and have all of them sort of...
Yeah, it's very neat.
Like a family tree underneath
it. Yes, Europe and then broken down into countries. So if you're a travel blogger, obviously that would be the most obvious thing to do, is be having all these different... Or you could be having blogging tips or how... I don't know. We've just done one for Christmas gifts for a traveller.
Yeah.
See, I mean, the sky's your limit, but you want to be creating boards.
Yeah, and you also want to be thinking, which I didn't think about, seasonally with your boards as well. So I went to a great talk about this, and we were actually fortunate enough to be given a Pinterest planner, which I've got in front of me.
It's about to end, but hopefully, I'm hoping they'll be able to send us the 2020
one. Which is basically a big calendar. And in it, you go through the months and it's got all the different things that come up in that month. So for example,
let's talk about now at the moment. So it's Christmas time.
It's Christmas. So if we go to December, okay, so it's got... They talk with them about, rather than seasonal moments, they're just moments. So their moment one is last minute Christmas gifts, for example. You might want to start a board dedicated to that. Yeah. And they've got popular Christmas gifting searches. So Santa secret gifts, gift wrapping ideas, edible Christmas gifts, gifts for boyfriend,
example. And they're the most searched terms of last year around that time. So basically they're helping you tap into the most popular search and content around that time. So you should be really creating content around those.
And then for example, then the moment four is happy 2020. People are looking for New Year's quotes, New Year's resolutions, yeah. New Year party ideas, that kind of thing. And what's really good about throughout this planner, they've got like little stats. So for example, compared to the average internet user, pinners in the UK are 38% more likely to research gifts online before buying. Yeah. So why not
tap into that?
Tap into that and provide, you know, content for that appetite. So you can have your boards that always stay there, for example, Europe.
Yeah.
But then think seasonally and also think ahead of seasonally. So maybe in October, November,
yeah.
get your winter or Christmas break
board
ready.
They're actually saying that, you know, for Christmas, you should be, for the early planners, you should be providing content in August.
Yeah.
So you have to be taking into account the early planners and then the last minute ones.
Well, people come to Pinterest to plan
yeah.
and then buy.
Yeah.
So if you're
Pinterest people must be organised people.
Very organised people.
Yeah. So have your boards and then try to think seasonally, or you want your evergreen ones, obviously, like Europe travel, but also throw in those seasonal ones if you can.
Yeah.
Christmas, if you're a beauty blogger, you might be thinking about fashion week boards.
Yeah.
If you're, I don't know, lifestyle, you might want to think about Valentine's Day boards.
Yeah. So think seasonally, but then in terms of the aesthetics of your boards, so more than 80% of all pinners actually use Pinterest on their mobiles.
Yeah.
Which is a really, I don't know if you've used it, but it's really immersive. So when you click on a pin, it takes up your whole screen.
Yeah.
So all of your pins, they want to be vertical.
Yeah.
So they give you a number of different ratios, which are great to use.
It's 2-3 aspect ratio.
So you think big, think vertical, like with Instagram, really.
Yeah.
The kind of vertical trend continues.
I think perhaps before that, where can people create pretty pins? That is probably the first thing.
Well, Pinterest have now introduced their own Pinterest.
I haven't tried it yet.
No, so you can go and create your own pins within Pinterest.
I didn't know that.
Which back in the day was quite basic.
Yeah.
But now I think because they're aware of third-party apps and software,
yeah.
they've introduced their own. So predominantly Claire and I have used, and I think most pinners use, Canva.
Yeah.
Canva.
And they have, when you go onto Canva, there's a Pinterest-specific design set up already for you in terms of dimensions, so it's super easy, isn't it?
Really easy. Yeah. So you go on there, I think you pay a small amount a month if you're more than one user or you want to share designs. Yeah.
But it is free mostly if you want to.
So we normally go out there, we upload one big image, put our header on it, so five great Christmas ads. Make sure we put Twins at Travel.
Five great Christmas ads.
I was thinking of ads. Gifts. then you might want to do a great Christmas ad, John Lewis.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola. Make sure we always have Twins at Travel as our URL that's visible there.
Yeah.
It's overlay text.
Yeah.
Download it and then upload that as a pin in itself.
Yeah. So yeah, Canva, I think, is the tool that we're using, but I didn't know that Pinterest have introduced an area where you can create your own pins now. So I'll definitely be looking at that and giving that a try, because it might be, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see whether algorithmically they might prefer that. That'd be quite an interesting test.
So I think, so you want to create your pins and make them aesthetically pleasing, think vertical, think bold. But then also, as well as pinning your own pins, you should be thinking about pinning others. So one question at actually the workshop was, a girl had her own boards, but I think she was curating them in a very specific way, as with Instagram. So it was all her own content, so she had control over how her pins looked. She said, should I really be pinning from others? Yes, that is really important.
Yeah.
They say consistently, so you want to be looking between 10 to 20 pins a day.
Yeah.
A mix of
20 to 30, actually.
It changed across different workshops. So you want to be pinning your own content, but also making sure you're using others.
That is the nature of Pinterest. Sharing ideas, isn't it?
And you can schedule them if you want to. Yeah. So you're not having to go onto Pinterest every single day.
Yeah, so we use Tailwind to schedule our pins, but I also know that Pinterest have introduced their own again, because obviously there's competitors around there. Haven't tried it, but definitely would try it.
Yeah. So you can always schedule far ahead. So you've got your boards, and your boards are also including others' content, which is really important to start engagement. Thinking vertically, you've got your rich pins, you've claimed your website.
The only thing to add is adding those pins that you've created at the end of your blog posts for each one.
Oh yes, make sure that, a lot of, it doesn't have to be at the end. Some bloggers put their pinnable images at the top.
Yeah, so you've obviously got your normal images the whole way through, which if you hover over them, they say pin it.
Yeah.
So people might want to just pin those lovely images. But at the end, you should have sort of a clearer call to action pin, which is the one that you've created on Canva. So 5 cozy UK breaks.
Yeah.
Have that image and that pin in that blog post as well, because people will more likely to pin that.
And some people I've seen have multiple versions of it throughout. So again, this is from the aesthetic point of point of view, some people might be quite picky with how their pins look. So I've seen some people have 6 or 7 pinnable image covers.
Same content, but different design.
Same content, same title, but different design. And as you say, oh, at the end, there's like 6 to choose from, all the same title. We've never done that. We've always gone with one.
Our friend Beck said, which we can do on our blog, which I would like to try, is perhaps you click on, you only see one of the pinnable images, but when you click on it, 5 other options ping up of different designs.
Because you can use, you can put hide these pins, can't you? So you can kind of put them behind it.
Yeah,
which is quite a good idea.
Really helpful, because if someone is creating a board which is particularly aesthetically, I don't know, they're trying to style it in a certain way, give them a variety of pins, designs, so they're more likely to pin one, I guess.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of, I guess that was almost covers the first workshop that we went to, which is the science of a pin.
Well, we kind of need to go into actually when you create the pin, what you need to be thinking of, which is context.
So when we went, the first workshop we went to was the science of a pin, which is before you even start thinking about shopping and all that type of thing on Pinterest, is making sure you get the pinning part right, which is creating that pin.
Yeah,
and making
because
it be seen.
You can get a pin horribly wrong, which I didn't realise either.
And I've seen some horrible ones.
I mean, I guess aesthetically I've seen some horrible ones, but I didn't realise that there was like a science behind it.
Yeah. So the workshop was really helpfully broken down into segments. And the first one relating to the science of a pin is the context. So as we're talking about, Pinterest like to see themselves sort of broken down into moments. So that could be a seasonal moment like Christmas. It could be a life event, so weddings or having a baby.
Yeah.
And then there's everyday interests, which is like decorating.
Cooking.
Or cooking. So the first thing to do is when you're creating your pin, if you're blogging about travel, is making sure it fits into the context somewhere on Pinterest. So that is, okay, it's a travel pin.
Yeah.
It's a life event. No, it wouldn't be a life event, would it? I don't know how you'd categorise travel as a moment or a life event, really.
I think a life event, especially if you're planning for that big holiday.
Or say it's your honeymoon.
Yeah.
So you've just created an amazing blog post on 10 most romantic honeymoons. Yeah. That's going to categorise into your weddings or honeymoons.
Yeah.
So make sure that pin has context and it makes sense. If someone sees it, they think, aha, that's a travel pin, or it, and that fits into honeymoons.
I've seen some bizarre pins.
You just,
how to know if your partner is cheating on you with your dog. Like, it just
like
really
where would that
pins.
Fit on Pinterest, and how would someone searching Pinterest find that?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. How would someone find your pin on Pinterest if they were searching?
Put the pinner first.
Yeah. Okay, honeymoons. Make sure that is it's clear by the design and the job description, the pin description, that's where it fits. And then you're more likely to find it for it to be found. So give it some context. The second one is content. It is about making it visually appealing. So like Laura said, it's the last positive corner of the internet.
Yeah.
So you don't want a pin that is 10 reasons why I hate life.
Yeah, or why I quit my job, or you know, that kind of negative.
So that, they say that it needs to be positive, and not only does it need to be positive, it needs to be feel attainable and actionable.
Yeah.
So like we were saying, unlike Instagram, which is looking at someone size 4 person walking across a zebra crossing with a Gucci bag, that's aspirational.
Yeah.
Looking at that, there's nothing you can do there to achieve that, really.
No.
Unlikely. So these need to be actionable and attainable. So, how to make Christmas DIY on a budget. That's actionable.
The 3 best bags that look like this Gucci bag or something like that.
So it needs to be for the average Pinterest user, I can do that, I can achieve that, I'm going to click on that and find out how to do it.
Yeah.
So that is content.
Mm-hmm.
The third one was craft, and that's like you said,
which
is relating to how you create that pin.
Yeah.
And the more, I guess it's the more technical side. So like Laura mentioned.
But thankfully not too technical.
No, it's very easy.
Yeah.
Like Laura mentioned, it should be vertical with 2-3 aspect ratio. But like I said, if you use Canva, or I'm guessing the Pinterest own option.
Pin create.
They will create the dimensions for you, so you don't need to worry about that. Remember that 80% of users are mobile users. Have a strong product focus. So I guess if you're selling a lipstick on there, make that lipstick the focal point of that pin. Make it clear that's what you're selling. Again, if we're doing Abu Dhabi, make sure it's not going to be a picture of just a selfie of me and Laura, it's going to be a photo of Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
So make it have a strong product focus. Align yourself with moments, like we said.
Yeah.
So honeymoon ideas, wedding ideas. Always use text overlay, like we said, so
Canva or on the Pinterest, on the pin creator.
Give it a title, and then at the bottom, give your website URL. Include a clear call to action. We don't include a clear call to action. We probably could have like read now.
I guess you could have read now, but I think in a way the title is self-explanatory. Yeah. So if you're doing 48 hours in Marrakesh, you know, a great itinerary,
yeah,
and you're interested in and you've searched.
That's true. I guess if you were selling a product, perhaps you'd need to make that pin more actionable.
Yeah.
Shop now. You know.
Shop now for the best.
Get the look now or something like that. And the last one, which I think we found, oh no, this is moving on to pin description actually.
So which is still, I think, part of the craft. Of the science.
So when creating your pin description, a lot of people think, well, how, you know, what do I write? Well, there's a few key things that you need to think of. Firstly, which we had no idea about, is put your brand name or your website at the very beginning of that pin description, which we've never done before.
Well, I gave this some thought. Would it necessarily be hugely helpful? Because does anyone go to Pinterest and search Twins That Travel?
No, but it doesn't. It's not like the first couple of words are the key words. As long as the keywords are in that description somewhere, it doesn't matter.
But I can understand if I was searching loaf sofas.
Yeah.
Then I want Loaf's brand name to be in the key description. But when it comes to Twins That Travel, I didn't feel like anyone was coming to Pinterest to search Twins That Travel.
Yeah, but you could have www.twinsthattravel.com, our guide to Abu Dhabi. So the keywords Abu Dhabi are still in the pin description.
But why then would you have your URL there?
Yeah, I think perhaps it makes more sense with...
I think it's more sense of brands. So or you're, you know, thinking makeup looks of Maybelline or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, with the descriptions, the last 2 years, I've not really been sure. Mm. Like, do I need to put hashtags?
Yeah.
Do I need to really stuff it with keywords? Does it need to be very descriptive, very long? I just was really not sure.
As it turns out, it's very straightforward.
It's straightforward, concise, clear.
Key search terms.
Key search terms. So, I mean, little use for hashtags.
Yeah, I asked a question, didn't I? Do you need to use hashtags in the pin description? She said, not... most people don't bother searching by a hashtag now. Just think of a key search term. So
just like SEO.
Yeah, honeymoon ideas. If it's about a honeymoon blog, put in honeymoon ideas. Just make sure those key search terms are in your description so it's pulled through when people are searching it.
Yeah, and she said if people did use hashtags, they tended to be much more broader. Yeah. So if they make a chocolate cake, it was just chocolate or, you know, that kind of thing, or birthday cake.
Yeah.
So keep it broad because I guess people aren't using necessarily very niche minute hashtags, which they might actually on Instagram.
I mean, I guess you could quite niche, like nails. You could do, it says in there, like, something dipped nails was such a trend in 2020.
Yeah.
2019, sorry. So, the science of a pin is keep it vertical, do a good pin description, give it some context, keep it positive and attainable and actionable.
Yeah.
The end, really.
Yeah, the end.
So this is where that was a really good, I think, introduction, wasn't it, to Pinterest and making sure we got our pinning sort of right before we moved on to the other workshops.
Yeah.
Then we split up, didn't we, to maximise our time. I went on to video pins, which is a new feature.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll do it really quickly. So video pins have been around for a while if you're a brand and you're using ads. So you can upload video to a pin for an ad, but it hasn't been an option for sort of organic pinning. So me and you, if we weren't creating an ad, we wouldn't be able to upload a video.
Yeah.
This has recently been rolled out. So you can use video instead to promote a blog post if you wanted to.
Yeah. And you can also put video as your header on your profile. So if you go into Pinterest, everyone has a header, like a bit like LinkedIn or Facebook.
Yeah.
But you can actually have a video header.
And again, everyone knows video content does 100 times better on every single platform than static image. And it's exactly the same for Pinterest. So they gave us a few stats that you get 26% more engagement than traditional static images on Pinterest. And 53% of pinners said they're more likely to purchase from a brand if they see a video.
Should the video be vertical?
Yeah. I'll move on to that kind of thing. But it was a panel workshop. I think it was Lonely Planet were there and then two others were there. And it was really, really interesting. But they were basically saying, because it's a new feature, a bit like any platform, when there's a new feature, that Pinterest will push it more than their traditional features. So
it's more algorithmically favoured.
Yeah, if you can be an early adopter of video now, you're going to get ahead quicker because they're pushing that algorithmically, they're pushing video more. So if you've got little videos of 6 to 20 seconds.
Yeah, that was one thing because I thought they're going to have to be like full vlog length, you know.
No, 6 to 20 seconds of a video. So think about it. I uploaded one the other day. We'd done some Cappadocia lovely pins, but I uploaded one of I think it was a 20-second clip of when we were doing on the hot air balloon.
Yeah.
And again, that still links to our blog post, but it's a video. So it'd be interesting to see how that performs compared to a static image.
Yeah.
So they're really easy to try. Lonely Planet was saying, don't bother with really expensive production videos. They are now just using mobile videos shot on their mobile because it's actually more about the human experience and, again, making it feel attainable and actionable.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you're trying to think of what you could use. The most popular pins are story pins. So I guess that was how we would fall into a category, is we might be telling a story of Cappadocia.
Yeah.
So you're catching their attention through us. It probably would have been better if it captured one of our faces as well. Mm-hmm. So you're like conveying a human connection there.
Yeah.
And the other one is how-to videos.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant for a brand. So you might be doing how to create the perfect Christmas makeup look. Yeah. So create a 6 to 20 second tutorial. And you can click into it. It could be a larger video that they can carry on watching. But really,
or over on YouTube or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, or something like that. But 6 to 20 seconds is really good. So how-to videos and storytelling videos are the most popular. Mm-hmm. And like I said, algorithmically, they're being really pushed at the moment. So why not create a static image pin for a blog post and do a video one and just see how it compares.
And you should add subtitles, shouldn't you?
If there's talking in it. Definitely, you need to add subtitles. And so I was about to get onto that, actually. I asked Lonely Planet, well, what do they use? Because some of the equipment's really expensive to add subtitles.
Yeah.
But they just use Premiere Pro, where you can add in your captions over the top. And there's also a free version of Premiere Pro called Adobe Premiere Rush, which is for mobile use only. Apparently, it's super, super easy, but it's perfect to make pins.
Yeah.
So Adobe Premiere Rush, I've linked to all of this in the blog post you wrote on this Pinterest guide, so you can take a look there. And I thought one really good interesting thing was, the most important thing when creating video generally is, rather than sort of obsessing with standalone content about your brand, try and see what's like trending or what people are talking about generally, and then kind of build your video around those conversations that are already happening. So rather than spending, I don't know, half a day creating this perfect brand video, which no one is thinking about or talking about, why not, I don't know, Colin the Caterpillar on Marks and Spencer's is trending and all of his clones. Why not create a video, if you're a recipe-based blogger,
creating one,
create a conversation around Colin the Caterpillar, to make your own Colin the Caterpillar. So rather than, standalone content, try and buy into conversations that are happening generally.
Well, that's a bit like the seasonal boards, but I guess it's more trend-based.
Yeah, just general UK trends or US trends that are happening, conversation that's happening. So video was really interesting, and like I said, it's a new feature to be used organically, and we're testing it at the moment to see how those video pins or blog posts compare to static images. So that was the end of the video one.
Great.
You went to story pins.
Story pins. So story pins, I guess, could be seen as similar to Instagram stories in that it's giving creators more space to tell their story, to be creative, and to...
What is a story pin?
So a story pin, essentially, is a new feature of up to 20 slides that is encased within one pin. So you click on the first front cover, which would look like your standard pin, vertical. You can have text overlay, but also when you click on it, it comes up with a much bigger font with a title.
Yeah, I saw that on ours.
Like a pop-up.
Yeah.
So I haven't done text overlay as of yet because the title, when you hover over it, pops up quite...
Right.
I don't know. So I just
I did think it was a little... It'd be a bit too much, I think.
Too much. You'd see it twice.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you basically... Because, think again, most people are looking at pins on their phone. You'll click into it. It will take up your full screen.
Yeah.
And you swipe right, really, like a story.
Yeah.
And you go up to 20 slides.
Are they all static or can you have video?
You can have video.
Okay.
You can have video, visuals and text. So what was really good about this is a multiple destination link. So say I've got a blog post, 10 free things to do in Portland.
Yeah.
I can create an amazing story pin for that. So I have my front cover, and then every single page is the number one, number two, number three, and every single one I can attach a different URL destination to it. So this is great also if you want to create a story pin based on maybe 10 blog posts.
Yeah, so summer holiday ideas.
Yeah, so you can create... you can drive so much traffic from one pin in that case, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Or just to one individual blog post if you want. They are, again, with the video, this is something they're really pushing. So it's only available currently to business users in the UK and Germany.
Mm.
Nowhere else. So if you are in... That noise made me jump. I don't know. So if you are in those countries and you have a business account, which you should... You could be an early adopter, and your story pins could embed well ahead of like people in America or Australia who are going to be using it. So Again, they're also algorithmically preferenced, so they're getting further reach.
How is our story pins doing? Have you looked?
Really well. One's had 20k impressions.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's really good. They say, basically, they wanted to create more organic value for a creator. So I think what's frustrating with the Pinterest is just one image with one
location,
URL.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, therefore, you're having to create an awful lot of pins.
Yeah,
constantly.
To cover all of them, yeah.
So you want more organic value, and this is story pin gives that. It will say every single page within the story pin has a very large description box. I think it was up to 500 characters. So
yeah, and they're really easy to they're big
and what they want you to tell as well is a better story. So if you're doing perhaps how to create a lasagna, which weirdly has been one of the most searched story pins.
Oh, I'd love a lasagna now.
On every page you can create you can write down full instructions, and then if you carry on scrolling down you can also add your URL, which comes up as like a little picture sample of your web page. But for us as travel bloggers, you know, say we're doing five top Christmas destinations. Number one, Monschau.
And then you write a lovely little description
about it. I can write a full description. So I get to tell more of my story.
Yeah.
But also with that, I get to stuff much more keywords in there constantly. I asked whether the keywords were only crawled on the first page, so 10 UK Christmas breaks. She said there is a preference for the first page, but then they are crawled throughout.
Okay, so you might want to stuff all your keywords into the first page.
Yeah, but you can also, they do, I guess it's like a smaller percentage for the rest of them. So she was saying, yeah, push them. What they suggest is maybe 20 is a bit long, but don't just do two. At least use between 5 and 6 for your stories, at least as a bare minimum. Again, these want to inspire action. It could be like top 10 honeymoon destinations on a budget.
Yeah.
And then you've got much more room to play with than this one pin.
Yeah.
Craft great text. So again, be aware of these great descriptions you have, so like 500 characters. You can write concise, clear text, whether that's how-to guides, travel guides, gifting guides. Be sure to use beautiful visuals, again, of a 900 by 1600, 9 to 16 ratio.
Yeah.
Full screen immersive. Yeah. So make sure they're high definition, like don't have something.
I think it's so important to, this is what I didn't touch upon, is really when you're thinking about your pins, they need to be high quality imagery.
Definitely. Absolutely. Because they're going to be coming up on, and people have big screens these days.
Yeah.
So keep them going with that. Weave your keywords to every single page of your pin. And lastly, be sure that you tell a story. So when you start with your page number one, make sure page number two links to page number one, like it's a narrative.
Yeah, you're telling a story, aren't
Don't let that be sort of disassociated from each other. Like
jumping around from a summer trend, a winter trend.
Yeah, exactly. Make it more kind of evident that you're following this trend. So we saw some great people there. There was a mural, a wallpaper studio, and they had been doing beautiful story pins, like based on like our top five green wallpapers.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
amazing.
Go through and
I guess were they product pins?
Yeah, and they were product pins, so you could swipe up and go and shop straight away. And they were saying to have a multiple destination URLs within one pin
amazing.
Saves them an awful lot of work, but also I asked, because I said, I got a bit worried. I said, say you've got 20 pages of a PIM and your URLs, you're putting a different URL on every page. What's the likelihood that the first page is going to be swiped up on compared to the 20th page?
Yeah,
they said they don't have analytics to be able to look at that yet, to go down to that minutiae, but you should try and link on most pages.
Yeah, well, I think even if not everyone swipes up, there might be someone who finds that information useful.
So. And at least there's more chance.
Exactly.
Rather than just the one pin. Yeah. So story pins, again, another big trend for 2020.
I think they're going to be so good, not only for bloggers, but I was just thinking about the beauty brand that I look after. You know, we could have lipsticks, 10 lipsticks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be amazing. So yeah, the story pins is new, video pins is new. And then the last one that I went to was shopping on Pinterest. So at the moment, in terms of shopping on Pinterest, you have shopping ads. You can have shopping ads in which you can shop now and that will link directly and you can purchase basically through Pinterest. But the brand new thing that they've brought out, which I think is so good, not really for bloggers, unless I guess you've got an online shop, but for a business owner who's selling products, they've brought a new thing out called catalogues, which, trying not to sort of explain it in a really geeky way, but it's categorized as something called a feed ingestion tool, which basically means it's a bit of code that will talk to your website and it will pull through all of your products and you can create pins for each product without having to sort of manually create each one. It'll pull all your products through straight away onto Pinterest, and you can then put them into subcategories. So, I don't know, trousers, tops, And the best thing about it is when they go on sale or the stock is low, that will update on Pinterest too automatically. Yeah. So you basically, in essence, created a secondary shop.
Yeah, because I think one of the big frustrations that pinners expressed was that they were tapping on products that were pinned
sold out
4 years ago.
Exactly.
And the URL doesn't exist, or it was a broken link.
Yeah, exactly.
And they need to because they're very focused on inspirational, actionable content.
Yeah.
That was a big problem for them.
Yeah. So now with this shopping of Pinterest, this sort of catalog function, they will all stay up to date. And Marie Claire were on the panel. They obviously don't sell their own stuff, but they have affiliate links for so many things. So they've created their own pages. All of them are affiliate linked to the product destination, but they're making money obviously off the back of those affiliate links. And they just said it's so different because you don't have to do anything now. You literally, the code talks to your website, pulls all your products through, just pop them into different subcategories, and you're done.
Yep.
So again, it's just Pinterest being very aware of the fact that they're a search engine and making shopping on Pinterest a much easier experience, not only for the consumer, but for the brand. So that was my last workshop, really.
If you wanted to set up a catalogue, how hard is it to do that?
It's not hard. It's just a bit of code into your... But again, there are step-by-step guides on the website.
Yeah.
If you have a website manager, which I'm guessing if you're a brand, you probably will, probably easier just to get them to do it. But it's not difficult, and it can all be done super fast.
So for anyone wanting to sell any product on Pinterest...
Well, provided they've got that product page on their blog.
Yeah, are they suggesting that we should all be using catalog?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Just having a look at the blog that we put together in terms of Pinterest, we did put together the sort of the most commonly asked Q&As, which might be a nice way to end the podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've already covered, I asked how important hashtags are in a pin caption, kind of fed back. You could still use a few, but not really. No one really searches by a hashtag.
Well, like we said, keep them broad,
Broad. Are group boards still worthwhile? This is really interesting. So group board, these were kind of really popular a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In that you might have like top UK bloggers board, and there's a lot of bloggers who are all contributing to that board in the hope that all of their different audiences and your audience will obviously spread their content around. They're not being pushed anymore because they're seen by Pinterest as inauthentic.
Contrived.
So I wouldn't really bother spending too much time trying to find...
I just left all of ours. I just archived all of them.
Trying to find group boards is a waste of time.
This is an echo chamber, really,
isn't it? How many pins per day should I be pinning? I've put 20 to 30, but you said 10 to 20.
Yeah, I guess within that range.
Yeah. Should my boards be aesthetically pleasing and overly curated, a bit like Instagram? This is the question you asked.
I asked this because I was thinking, when people are pinning, are they thinking, well, this look good on my board? Or are they thinking, that's useful?
Yeah.
She said they would prefer the pins to be useful, with not broken links, with actionable content. But to keep in mind that people are still visually stimulated by pins, and they're looking they're attracted to pins. So, you know, do put some time into it. But more than anything, make sure that the content you're linking to is useful.
Yeah. Okay. Two more questions. How long does it take to test content on Pinterest? So if you're a brand and you're testing a video pin, you know, how long do you wait? Because when you do it on Instagram, it's almost instantaneous. Mm-hmm. She said it takes a little longer for content to heat up on the platform. So if you're testing a pin, allow for a couple of weeks before testing return of investment.
In the workshop I went to, Mural, and I think it was made.com, said they wait for about a month.
Yeah.
Then like story pins, and then they're going back, seeing how they did, looking at the traffic, if they've got it all linked up. Because that's the other thing we haven't mentioned is Google Analytics, Pinterest Analytics.
Yeah, Pinterest Analytics are brilliant.
Which are incredible. And particularly on story pins and video pins, they're giving you a really in-depth view now.
Yeah.
At close-ups, so how many people have clicked on it. And
but not taken any action.
Link clicks, shares, that kind of thing. But the analytics is really helpful to kind of tell what pins working and what pins
are not working
and why. Your keyword's not right, is the design a bit naff, is it not seasonal, is it not appropriate, not being searched. So I think we could probably do with looking back at all our analytics,
which ones have done well,
and looking at what's not done well, and then either reworking the pin, the keywords, and starting again.
But like we said, it's not an instantaneous thing like Instagram. Leave it a month. And lastly, like you've already said, should I pin other people's creators' content? Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't detract from your own content in any way.
No.
And that's what the site was designed for. So even if you have a business board, you know, pin other people's content if it's useful.
Because if it's useful as well, they'll come back to your boards to access,
or they'll
the
follow your boards.
So it's a way to engage users with other people's great content, which is not something you can do on Instagram. You know, I couldn't put up, well, I could, but I couldn't just post other people's content in order to get people to follow me.
No, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't really work
Which
like
again
that.
Makes Pinterest such a friendlier, community-based platform, doesn't it? They were all the questions, really, anyway, to finish.
So we came away just, like, brimming with ideas, stuff we need to do, like story pins, more video pins. I think we need to think seasonally, which we never have.
Yeah.
And also, when you're thinking seasonally, drag those seasonal boards to the top of your boards.
Yeah, rearrange them.
Rearrange your boards. Look at trends. So Pinterest actually release a sort of a trend setter.
Yeah, the 2020 is due in a couple of weeks.
So what they think is going to be great or big next year. So you begin to plan your content accordingly to that. So there's a strategy behind Pinterest and pinners that I had not appreciated. Before, for me, it was so ad hoc. It was like, I create an image on Canva, I'll add it to our travel boards, I hope other people pin it. Yeah. Now I realise I need to be useful to people. Yeah. I need to be providing actual content. And not all my content has to stem from my blog posts. We can create boards like you did the other day with Christmas gift guides that has affiliate links but has absolutely nothing to do with our blog.
Yeah.
So there's so much more we could be doing.
The world
Pinterest.
Is your oyster with that platform.
Exactly. And in fact, I still think after this, we need to actually wind down.
We need to go home and just do a load of work.
Do more stuff on Pinterest. Because I think even in the last month, we've seen, I think it was an increase in engagements of about 4,000 more engagements.
Yeah, and our impressions have gone up to over 210,000 from 66,000 impressions.
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
And that's from doing not too much at all.
Yeah.
So I think there's still so much more to be done to think strategically about Pinterest and to see it as a space in its own right, not just an appendage to your blog where you just stick a pinnable image from your blog.
Yeah.
You need to be doing so much more.
Yeah.
Well, not that you need to, but if you do, you'll definitely reap the rewards. Yeah.
So if this has been a long ramble, we'll link to the actual blog post we've written, which summarises all of this as well. And feel free to ask us any questions. We're not Pinterest experts, but I hope we have some value now.
But our friend does run a Pinterest course, which we can try and link somewhere.
Yeah.
And I did take it 2 years ago.
It's brilliant.
It was really valuable. Yeah. And she's a Pinterest geek. Her and her brother run it together, total geeks. So we'll link to that somewhere.
Yeah, we'll link to it in the blog post.
I think she's got a sale on anyway on it as well at the minute.
Yeah, we'll definitely link. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hopefully that was vaguely interesting and helpful.
No, it stimulated me to go and think about doing some more stuff.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thanks very much.
Talk to you soon.
Talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.